The Planet Rock Podcast with Sky Talk. Find a Sky Talk pack to suit you with inclusive calls to UK mobiles. Search Sky Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Planet Rock Podcast with Sky Talk. Coming up, we got the best bits of chat and exclusive rock and roll interviews from Planet Rock. In this week's podcast, Alice Cooper recalls his last conversation with the late, great Lemmy from Motorhead.
Alice, darling, I've quit drinking whiskey. Drinking vodka now.
We delve into the Planet Rock archives with Sir Mick Jagger telling us about the classic Stones album Sticky Fingers.
It's a bit of a kind of collection of songs from all over.
If you like your music a little bit eccentric, but you still love the commerciality of a band like Queen,
then Joe Elliott from Def Leppard will have some top musical recommendations for you. Plus, Hairy Biker Dave is on his own this week, but that's not stopping him. He describes his show as Fanny Craddock
meets Virginia Ironside. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of vibe.
Brian Johnson showcases more producers for you, including Roy Thomas Baker, who's synonymous with
helping to craft the unique sound of Queen. He produced the Cars debut album, plus classics like Journey's Infinity and Foreigner's Head Games.
We spoke to Heart on their first trip to the UK for 12 years.
We kind of freaked out at that last moment, and we had to practice entry-level meditation technique to get through it.
And we're backstage at the recent Ramblin' Man Fair with Aussie rock heavyweights Airborne, who tell us the secret to their success.
On this record, there's some songs that were literally written in the morning of waking up with a hangover.
So let's kick off with Thunder's Danny Bowes, who starts by telling us about his dramatic first ever gig experience.
Danny Bowes, life and rock.
Listen to baby, let the music flow. Yeah. Turn on your light and stay with me a while and ease your worry mind. Turn on your light now, baby, and stay with me a while and rock steady. Yeah.
Ah, bad company. Rock steady. I made no secret, I think I must have said this many, many times on the radio, that Bad Company was the first show I ever went to see. When I was 14 years old, I had suspected appendicitis about 2 weeks before, rushed to hospital, and had my tickets in my hand when I went to hospital, because I was thinking, there's no way they're going to keep me in. And I needed to show my tickets to the doctor so they would let me out. This is how desperate I was to go to the gig. And they rushed me in there, and they said, here's appendix, we're going to have to take these out, you're going to hospital for however long. I said, no, I can't do that, because I've got to go and see, look, here's my tickets here, I'm going to see Bad Company. And they said, well, no, that'll have to go out the window, because it's appendix. I went, no, you don't understand. You know, I paid £2 for these tickets, plus 20 pence booking fee. And the lady, I don't remember, I know it must have been a lady, I forgot to put a stamped addressed envelope in. And she sent the tickets back to me, and she put a little compliment slip in, and she said, next time, please put a stamped addressed envelope. I knew it must have been a lady. It wouldn't have been a man who wrote that. So I was beside myself. There's no way I was going to put up with this appendix. Baloney? That's the best word, isn't it? Nearly slipped up there. Wow. Okay, so suffice to say, a man came in, gave me an examination, shall we say, in the behind area, and decided it was wind, and they sent me home. And I never got to have my appendix out, which was handy. And I did go to the Bad Company gig, and I was beside myself. And that was the story of the poster getting trapped in the door and the tube, and it was all horrible. But what a gig. Best gig I remember. Remember it like it was yesterday. My first ever show. Loved it. Midnight Oil, Beds Are Burning. So apparently Midnight Oil chose their name out of a hat. That's weird, isn't it? Chose it out of a hat. Bizarre. Thunder's name came about as a result of a very long-winded, very dull and very boring conversation where we all lost the will to live because you would find that somebody would like it and the rest would hate it. And then another suggestion would be made and then one person liked it and the rest hated it. And on it went for hours and hours and hours until in the end, out of sheer desperation, Luke said, how about Thunder? It's big and loud and simple. Bit like us. And we all went, great. I think more out of relief than anything. And then that was it. Thunder was born. Amazing but true. Or is it dull but true? Who knows?
And now it's the man who dies on stage several times a show. Nights with Alice Cooper. Only on Planet Rock. Tell me what you think about your situation. Complication, aggravation is getting to you. Yeah! If cheeky little tells you that the sky is falling, even if it wasn't, would you still come crawling back again? I bet you would, my friend. Again and again and again and again and again.
That was, of course, Aerosmith with Living on the Edge. Steven Tyler recently commented on Joe Perry's recent onstage collapse. I think he's out there and someone's overbooking him. They're doing like 8 or 9 shows in a row, or 5 in a row. I think they're all a little burnt. I think they may need to look at that. Not young anymore, you know. Listen to Steven, does 2 shows a week. But that's Steven. Yeah, we were doing 4 in a row, 3 in a row. And Joe is great. Joe's back 100%. He is absolutely fine. You know, pretty hard to stop a Hollywood vampire. This day in rock, 47 years ago today, August 2nd, 1969, Bob Dylan shows up unexpectedly to his 10-year high school reunion in Hibbing, Minnesota. He and his wife leave early when a drunk tried to pick a fight with him. Probably the same guy that tried to beat him up in a high school. You know, the same bully. Oh, yeah, you little wimp. I give you Bob Dylan right here. Let's go. I'll make you subterranean homesick blue. That's what I'll do. All right. Dylan laughed all the way home, knowing that he could have bought the school and the bully, but he didn't. That was our late, great pal Lemmy. Definitely a latter-day Hollywood vampire. Makes him sound like a Mormon vampire. The last thing he said to me was, Alice, darling, I've quit drinking whiskey. Drinking vodka now. Probably spent more time at the Rainbow Bar and Grill than I did. I think he probably had a cot in the back. We just had our lair up on top. I did go there a couple times. We had a party there. And Mickey Dolenz was there. He was an original vampire. Bernie Taupin, original vampire. Great to see them. Bernie, by the way, came to the very last show of the tour with his lovely wife, Heather. Great to see Bernie.
The Hairy Bikers.
And the Hairy Rock Show.
Planet Rock.
Planet Rock.
That was Cheaper to Drink Alone with Blackstone Cherry. And as we know, we're beyond excitement because Blackstone Cherry are headlining the Planet Rockstock. And I can't wait. They're such an amazing booking. And when you think about it, I love Rockstock. So does Si. I'm there. Si's there. We've got our own little caravans. We'll be dancing our hearts out, just meeting people and having fun. But Blackstone Cherry certainly will be one of the highlights. Anyway, let's have one of your emails. And this one is from Sarah Gentle. Oh, Gentle. What a nice name, Sarah. And the subject is Sunday lunch. She says, hi, guys. Being as you spend so much time in France, what do you have for your Sunday lunch when you're there? Oh, well, I tend to leave the beef alone because I'm not quite... French beef isn't up to the standard of our beef because I believe we were the first people to eat beef. Beef. When they say the British are beef eaters, we were. It was the Leicestershire Longhorn was the first kind of moo-moo that was bred for meat rather than dairy. So the 6 native British breeds, there may be more, so don't shoot me down in flames. There's the Welsh Black, the Lincolnshire Red, The Leicestershire Longhorn, the Belted Galloway, the Aberdeen Angus, and Hereford. That's it, the Great Six. They're the original kind of cattle that's bred for beef, and they taste super beefy. I mean, his mate, King, is a Geordie farmer called Steve Ramshaw, and he's actually crossbreeding the native British breeds with the Wagyu beef. And it's the most amazing beef because it's got, like, Wagyu beef, it's kind of that Japanese beef that's like 70 quid a kilo. But it can be a bit tasteless, but it's tender. You cross that with native British beef, and it is superb. Do you know what he's calling it? He's calling it his YI Wagyu. And I kid you not, great stuff you can find. Anyway, now in France, I tend to go for lamb. It's very seasonal, you see, France. What I'll do is I'll go down the market on a Saturday, and I very often come back with a chicken, which is quite appropriate because our lives for the past 3 months have been obsessed with chicken and eggs. But yeah, I'll pay like €28 for a chicken, but it's a big, like, 5.5-pounder that's a proper grown-on critter. And I get like 10 meals out of it. You know, I feed 10 people, and the bones make great stock. So chicken really, really is a favourite. And lamb when it's in season. And French butchery is different. Anyway, Sarah Gentle, I'm sure, given that, so sensitive as you are, I bet you have some cracking Sunday lunches.
If you've ever burnt the spuds, or used sugar instead of salt, or set your oven on fire, you're safe now. Si and Dave's Sunday Roast Amnesty.
On Planet Rock.
I or sprout suckered? Is your beef boring? Is your lamb limp? Well, we can help you. Also, you know, the Sunday Roast Amnesty, we can extend it to personal problems and everything. It's a bit like, you know, kind of, I suppose, like Fanny Craddock meets Virginia Ironside. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of vibe. Anyway, this is from Mark Simmons Jenkins. He's Porsche, but he has three veg instead of two. And the subject is birthday buffet. Hi, Si and Dave. Why, hello, Mark. That's Si saying hello back. I'm celebrating my 55th birthday today. Happy birthday to you. And in style, we're off for an Indian buffet. Eat all you can, starting with poppadoms and pickles, followed by battered deep-fried vegetables. Then you can help yourself to two choices of rice, three meat choices and five veg choices. And if you've got room afterwards, you can ice cream to finish. All for just £8.95 a head. No hot oven, no washing up afterwards. Just sheer bliss on many plates to die. What's the best way to get our home curries tasting more authentic, like those from Indian restaurants? We've tried, but just can't get that same smashing taste. Thanks, keep up the good work, lads. Mark Simmons Jenkins. Mark, I thought you were going to be posh. You're not, you're common as muck, aren't you? Hey, you're one of those. That's why. £8.95 a head. By Christ, you don't have to live, do you? How do you get that authentic taste that's been stewed under a heat lamp for 3 hours? Well, actually, blowing our own trumpet, I think the best curry book that's out there on the market is ours. It's the Hairy Biker's Great Curries. When we were working on that book, we had about 12 Indian mums working on it, all vying to make that curry like they make the kids when they come home from school, real authentic curry. But that might not be what you want. You know what I mean? You don't want authentic, do you? You want curry house. I just got the supermarket, buy those kind of jars of plop, put your meat in, fry it up, but then you must leave it under a lamp for 2 hours just to moulder, you know, and then you can get that authentic crusty feel. But, you know, a celebration of difference. Actually, it's made me hungry now, really. What's my favourite curry? I like a sag gosht, you know. Never got bored with that. The lamb and spinach. Sag gosht with a mushroom pilau. Time for another email, and this is from Holly Wolliscroft, and the subject is cooking and bikes. Hi, Si and Dave. I emailed in before. I want to drop you both a line again. Thanks, Holly. When Si said my name when he read my email out, well, I nearly fell off my chair and spat my tea out. I was so surprised. Sometimes he does that to me too. He shouts, Dave! And I fall off my chair and spill my tea. But it's like that. It creeps up on you. My husband, Rob, was made up. He's invented no more straps you mentioned for his bike mounts. Ooh! Rob, no more straps. Handy in the bedroom as well as the bike. Yes. Since following your recipes, I've come to love cooking again and developed a real passion for cooking from scratch. Oh, thank you. How did you both get into cooking? I'm hoping my hubby's business takes off so I can quit my office job and cook instead. We love your show. Great music and chat. Keep it going. We look forward to tuning in on Sunday mornings. P.S. Rob really likes your ginger biscuits recipe. Oh, Rob's ginger nuts. Yeah, well, I hope your business does take up, because things like that, no more straps bike mounts, it will be great. No more bungies, no more eyes out. Best of luck with this, must look into it. Now, how do we get into cooking? Me, it was survival, really. My mother used to cook. She used to have the Victoria sponges, the scones, the baking day, the Sunday lunches, you know, the chicky chucking that's on there and potatoes. Beautiful. My mum was sick. She got MS. And from when I was 8, my dad took over the cooking, which was a disaster. He would, we had 3 years, and honestly, we were living on smash, tinned peas, and tin mints. Remember Tyne brand? It's not the King is not the only great thing to come out of Newcastle. Tyne brand mints. Anyway, I come home from school once, and I honestly 3 years of this, and it mixed it all up together in like this pile of stuff. And he said, "I thought we'd have a change." Oh, father! Anyway, I had to do the shopping from when I was about 12. So I started to buy stuff and I started to cook it. Few disasters. But that's how I got into it. Si was much luckier. The thing is, his dad was in the Merchant Navy and his mum was a great cook. But his father used to bring back all his wonderful ingredients from abroad. And so from an early age, you know, Stella would be cooking curries and cooking with star anise and all manner of wonderful things. As Si often says, he said, you know, they lived in like in Birtley. There's like miners' cottages. And there used to be this crag going, "Ee, Stella, what the hell are you cooking? What's the stink?" And she'd be cooking kind of, you know, Thai curries and everything from that time. So Si was much more au fait with it. But then his dad died when he was about 5. So actually Si used to cook with his mum. And when we met about 20 odd years ago, we kind of had a similar path into food, which has been, you know, been a blessing ever since, really.
He spent thousands of nights behind the mic with Def Leppard. Now he's behind our mic.
Joe Elliott on Planet Rock.
So if you've never heard that song before, as I announce it as a song by a guy called Earl Slick, and you start questioning your own sanity because you're thinking, my goodness, it doesn't half sound like David Bowie. Well, it does sound like David Bowie because the vocal is David Bowie. Earl Slick was David Bowie's long-term guitar player for many, many years, over 30 years, almost 40 years. He also worked with Ian Hunter in the Overnight Angels band. He worked with John Lennon on the Double Fantasy album. And in 2003, he released a solo album called Zigzag, which David Bowie supplied the vocals for that particular track, a song called Isn't It Evening. Now, if you like your music a little bit eccentric, but you still love the commerciality of a band like Queen, you might like this. This is Todd Rundgren's Utopia.
This is the Planet Rock Podcast with Skytalk. Choose from a range of Skytalk packs, which include free calls to UK mobiles.
Planet Rock's Brian Johnson.
And the producers.
Tonight's superstar producer has been involved with some of the most iconic albums ever recorded. He's synonymous with helping to craft the unique sound of Queen. He produced the Cars debut album, plus classics like Journey's Infinity and Foreigner's Head Games. There may have been some shenanigans along the way, but I'll let him tell you about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Roy Thomas Baker.
Here she comes again.
Yeah, that was Best Friend's Girl, and we recorded that in London, of all places, even though I live in LA and the band are from Boston. We decided to record over here. It was very weird because I've been doing, you know, a lot of sort of like heftier rock bands. And I was in Wessex Studios producing Queen. And in the next studio over was the Pistols. And Johnny Rotten went, "Oh, you're working with all those old, you know, it's all, you're all these slick over the top records." So he said, you should do a punk band. And so what happened was that I started looking for a band that was, you know, a four piece, a five piece, small, sort of loudish, rockish. And then I run into the Cars, and somebody played me a demo, and I listened to the demo, and they said they're playing in Boston tomorrow night. So I went up to Boston. It was freezing cold. The manager picked us up in like a little Volkswagen, which is the only car that could get through in the snowstorm. We went to see the Cars in front of like eight people in a school gymnasium. Right. And I was sitting up there, you know, chugging away and playing. And I said instantly at that time, "Okay, let's do it." We needed, you know, one or two more songs, the usual thing. And I got a copy of this song, Clones, from a woman who was married to a guy called David Caron. We had to try and find him because he was on the road somewhere in the world. To get permission to record the song, but we'd already recorded it, so it was a bit of a problem. So she got hold of him, and finally, when he came back to America, we said we've recorded Clones, and he went, "Oh no, that was supposed to be my song." So there was a big sort of argument and a near divorce, and in the meantime, we dragged him down to the studio and played it for him, and he sat there and listened to it, and then he burst into tears. And said, "That was really good. I really love that. Yes, you can have permission to do it." Okay, that was The Darkness, One Way Ticket to Hell and Back. The single, One Way Ticket, was primarily about all the problems that people have with drugs. And it included, you know, things in the song about how it came from South America and came up and ended up on people's noses. And we needed to get hold of somebody who could play really good pan flute. And so we got hold of our friend, Peter Schneider, who owns Rainforest Lodge and recording studio in Lima in Peru. And so we actually hooked up Whitfield Street studio here with his studio in Lima and overdubbed the pan flute for the beginning of One Way Ticket.
If it rocks, it's here. Planet Rock. Planet Rock. Planet.
It's the Heart Special on Planet Rock. Couldn't not play that one. That's Alone. Talking to Ann and Nancy Wilson, this is sort of an aside. I just got talking to them towards the end of our chat, and I was just intrigued because it made such an impact on me, and indeed lots of Planet Rock listeners that I know. When they did the Kennedy Center Awards, they performed Stairway to Heaven. Obviously not their song, but wow, what a show that was. It had Robert Plant in tears. I was curious what that experience was like for them.
When we saw it later, after having done, we were like, "Oh my God, what was that?
Yeah.
What just happened?"
Yeah, that was an interesting experience because they were going to get, Jeff Beck was on that show too, mm-hmm. as part of the Buddy Guy tribute, and they were going to have him play the Jimmy Page solo,
right.
And then at the last minute they had their own guy play it, and he did it great, you know, really great. But it was such a powerful moment for Nancy and I, because we realized, I think only kind of at the last minute, before we were about to walk on, that what we were doing,
right,
it dawned on us, there they are sitting up there, there's the president, there's the first lady, there's Yo-Yo Ma, there's Stephen Colbert, you know, I mean,
yeah.
The audience was just full of luminaries, you know, and we kind of freaked out at that last moment, and we had to practice entry-level meditation technique to get through it, but we did.
We had to lock eyes and bump skull rings.
Chill,
you know?
Down, yeah.
Breathe.
Yeah, and then after, then we were controlled during the song, and we didn't screw it up, and then after we walked off, then we flipped out, you know, so.
And it was really cool to see it later, too, because the emotion was running so high with the guys in Zeppelin. Mm. And we also realized that large part of that was that John Bonham's son was up there playing drums with all these beautiful reveal after reveal after reveal coming out, you know, of the song itself.
The more choir kept appearing.
The bigger, the more choirs.
How big was it in the end?
Oh, geez. Was it?
Small choir group of 30, I think, and then the larger group was like 75, 80. It was just got bigger.
But then there was
bigger.
The horn section in this, you know. The
What does that sound like? You're in front of them with all that vocal sound coming
we
past
have
you.
In-ear monitors.
Oh, right.
So we had it pretty dialed down to what we needed to hear just to be able to hear ourselves through it. But afterwards, we were at this dinner, and each of the guys from Zeppelin came up to us. And Robert was like, geez, I hate that song. Except now, when somebody finally didn't murder it.
Yeah.
You know, you guys did great. And then Jonesy was really sweet. And, you know, Jimmy said, you played that great. I'm like, oh, God, you just told me that. Can't believe, you know, Jimmy effing Page just said that.
Makes me wonder. There's a feeling I get when I look to the west, and my spirit is crying for leaving.
The best backstage action from the Ramblin' Man Fair.
Planet Rock.
It's Joel and Ryan from Airborne. Welcome back.
Great to be
good
back.
To be here.
Good to be here.
Do you know, it feels like forever since Back in the Game and Black Dog Barking came out. I know you've been busy playing live, but why so long for the comeback with an album?
Well, I mean, we finished the tour in 2015. We did a bunch of shows and stuff and come out again. And then it was after that we finally got back to Australia to really get this album underway. And then it just, we go to the pub a lot, to be honest. And then that's the thing. Like, we get home, it's just, and getting ideas is we want every song to earn its place. So there must have been about, you know, in terms of ideas, 50, 60 different ideas, but it's down to, you know, 11.
And of course, you've got to wait for at least 2 days of sobriety so you can fairly assess it. And that takes time.
It does.
You're drinking every day.
It does. Yeah. But on this record, there's some songs that were literally written in the morning of waking up with a hangover.
Yeah.
One of those is Thin the Blood.
Right. Well, says it all.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's things like that too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lot of work doing a record. You do have to go to the pub a lot, but then you got to remember the stories you found out on the road and stuff like that. And a lot happens in the world, you know, in rock and roll. And, and that's what we write about. And, you know, it's just, it takes a long time to do a record these days.
I'm guessing, now I'm no Mystic Meg or anything like that. I'm guessing it's, you're going to stick to what is working for you. It's going to be Rose Tattoo meets AC/DC meets Jet meets Airborne.
No ballads, no bullshit.
That would be like a real, that's a great, that could be the album title right there. What is it about ballads though with you? I mean, we all like ballads, but what is it that for you as a band makes you go, nah?
We couldn't sell it.
It's not just that. You know, it's we don't feel that. That's not within our blood.
Hmm.
It's not something we want to play. It's not something our fans want to hear. To put us all up there on stage, like Ron was saying, like to sell it, there's no way we could even play it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing you're pretty excited because all the shows, and you're doing all them, and now you're doing the festivals and all the European shows, and a new album's coming out. So You do it all again?
Yeah. It's a double two bites of the cherry thing.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I'm guessing you're pretty full on then for the next 3 years.
Yeah, something like that. Definitely next year is going to be fully booked, which is going to be good fun.
And you've got the UK dates as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're about to be announced.
Yeah, they're already on posters over there. But it's only people are walking past them that can see them. The general mass don't know about them just yet until now.
You
know.
Okay, cool.
You're back in the UK later in the year.
Yep.
There you go. There's a, there's a dribbled out exclusive right there. But listen, really looking forward to the new album. I don't have to anticipate it because I know exactly what it's going to be. Well, obviously, we've got Breaking Out of Hell, the new single's getting played. And
very airborne-y sounding song.
It's airborne. I mean, your biggest weapon to some might be the biggest weakness, but it's such a great weapon. It's airborne. It is what you are.
We grew up a lot of British bands like Motorhead, Status Quo. You know, those bands have made a whole career and a living and made so many fans of rock and roll happy live by every time never letting them down and sticking to the guns of why they signed up to that band.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, it feels like, yeah, it's like, hey, come and love our band, and then we'll change and cut our hair and all this sort of stuff and go, hang on, I used to love you, I feel robbed.
Yeah.
You've taken something from me. So we're like, no, well, all our favourite bands never did that. We're not the kind of people to do that anyway, so it ain't going to happen. Yeah. It's just going to be rock and roll forever.
Yeah. Joel Ryan, it's been a pleasure as always, Airborne. Welcome back.
Thanks for having us again. Great to see you again too.
UK. You rock.
Planet Rock.
Mick Jagger, welcome.
Thank you.
It's lovely to talk to you about such an amazing piece of music, but also an amazing body of the Rolling Stones' history.
Right.
We're talking about Sticky Fingers. Uh-huh. Before we start talking through the tracks, I just wanted you to put Sticky Fingers into context for me. Just to sort of maybe get to where you were. The album that you'd released before was Let It Bleed.
Yes.
And 1969. So where were you as a band?
You mean mentally or physically?
Mentally.
We're mostly in England, but I can't really remember all the tracks on it. We recorded a lot of time at that time in Olympic in London. We were on a pretty good, you know, Let It Bleed had a lot of really good songs on it, in my opinion. It's one of my favourite albums. And we were recording, you know, quite regularly. And we'd played around with in the Let It Bleed sessions, maybe some of it. And we, you know, followed on and recorded some of this in the Olympic Studios. And, you know, we were very busy as a band then. We did a lot of, we're actually quite busy. I feel really busy today. It's kind of tour planning and things and doing songwriting, and it's like a bit full on. But, you know, and we did this album was recorded in more than one location. So we recorded it, I think we worked out we recorded this in three places. And we had our mobile studio at that time, and we recorded some of it with that. And some of it we recorded on tour in America. So we went down, I mean, I've seen it in this movie, the Muscle Shoals movie. But we went for a little visit there because we were staying near there. We were doing a gig near there, I think, and we flew in. It was a sort of fashionable place to go. And sort of really, the funny thing is that people used to go there to play with a house band, really, at Muscle Shoals. That was the big deal about Muscle Shoals. That was a lovely place and all that. For a band, it was just another studio. I mean, it was lovely. I'm not down saying it was or anything, but it was a place you go if you were like, you know, Aretha Franklin, or you'd go and play with this band that they got together there, this, you know, this very funky band. And we were a band, but we didn't need the funky band kind of thing. We were our own funky band. So we recorded three tracks there, three tracks in an Olympic, three tracks in my house in the country with the mobile, and one was already recorded, I think. So yeah, it's a bit of a kind of collection of songs from all over.
And that's all for this week's Planet Rock podcast with Sky Talk. Hope you've enjoyed listening to our best bits. We'll be back next week with more rock and roll tomfoolery, so do join us then. Remember, you can listen to Planet Rock on your DAB radio, online at planetrock.com and via our Planet Rock app, or you can listen on your telly on Sky Channel 0110 or Virgin Channel 924. This is Paul Anthony, and I'm on Breakfast 6 till 10 every weekday morning. See you next time.
All the best bits of Planet Rock in our weekly podcast with Sky Talk. Love to rub it on for hours? Search Sky Talk now to find a pack to suit you.